Welcome to a new season, a new journey, if you will, as we go into season two of Masters of Horror. I'm Emily.
I'm Christine, still.
Still, you made it.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I'm here.
How excited were you to go into season two?
Not very.
Okay. So tell me your experience with season two of Masters of Horror, which ran late October. So it was October 2006 into 2007. On Showtime. A lot of the same faces come back. It is still being run by Mick Garris, but there are some new faces and some faces we lose. So had you watched any of these episodes in the past?
I purposely sought out my allergies are really bad, as I mentioned to you, so my brain is kind of broken. I watched the Black Cat episode.
Okay, the Stuart Gordon one.
Stuart Gordon, thank you. I could not pull his name. Oof, this is going to be rough. I sought that one out and really, really liked it.
Okay.
Other than that, I think I tried to watch the season from the beginning. So I've seen episode one, and I think I was so bored by it that I just never went back.
Interesting.
And I was like, oh, JK, this isn't for me. I think.
Yeah, I have seen maybe three episodes from this season, and I didn't. There's one episode that I remember watching around the time it aired, and when we get there, I'll talk about it. But for the most part, I remember where I was when this aired. I was living in Korea teaching ESL, so it was not. It was kind of easy for me to download things, but these weren't that downloadable at the time. So I didn't. It was hard for me to watch these, and I didn't seek them out. A couple of years ago, I think maybe like 8 years ago or so, they were on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
They went off and I never saw them after that. So at that point, it was when I think I watched the Joe Dante one. But that might have been it. So it's going to be a lot of new to me. And the two tonight, I definitely had not seen before. The two.
Yes.
I mean, the one that we record one at a time.
One at a time.
Always. So the season premiere. Now, first of all, I was excited because I'm like, ooh, I wonder what kind of opening credits we're going to get.
The same thing.
The same, I know. Yeah. How do you feel about opening credits for a show? Do you think they should change with the season, or do you think if they work for the entire run of the show?
I think that they should not exist at all.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
I think it should be a quick little boop. And then I'm in the show.
Have you always felt that way, or is that more because of the style in which you tend to watch things now? Where maybe you watch more at once, where you get tired of seeing the same opening?
No, I've always felt that way.
Okay.
Because it's a little much. Like, I mean, the Friends theme song was like on the charts. Like, we didn't need to hear that as much as we did. I'm sure somebody will disagree with me that loves the Friends theme song. But I don't know. I've never really enjoyed it. I think it's great now when things stream and you watch things, you know, in a row and they can skip
them.
I mean, it's not always a science. Sometimes you lose a second here or there or something.
Right.
But like, I don't know. I just never loved it.
Yeah.
I just let these play and like I'll finish up what I'm doing or, you know, be like, oh, you know what? I do need a cup of water and I run like. But
if I hurry, I can get back in time for the baby winking.
Oh, the baby winking.
Yeah,
I never even considered that they might be different for the second season.
I was hoping they would be. I like when a show, I mean, it depends on the show. Like, you know, like a show like Cheers, you don't ever need to change it. It's fine. It's perfect as it is. But at the same time, like, I don't know. I like the switch of, you know, like Buffy, I think, always did it well, where every season it's a little different. Scenes from the new season plus scenes from more recent seasons get Buffy in different hair, you know, shift mm-hmm. where the actors go, all of that. So I like a good adjustment. So I was kind of disappointed that we got the same ones, which I now have to watch 11 more times. So.
Well, just make sure you're finishing something up.
It's
finish
true.
Sending that text.
No, I did.
Go get that cup of tea.
And I watched this episode in the morning, so I did actually. I had gone to start making my coffee, and I let the credit. And I didn't actually. For this one, I did watch because I was curious if anything changed, and then I realized it wasn't going to change. So
now I didn't even think of that, but now that it's out there, I'm disappointed too.
At least like style the baby differently. I don't know, right? Instead of a rat desiccating, have it be like I don't know, a pigeon desiccating. Like, there's things you could do.
Give the baby a little wig.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be cute.
Push out of its face.
Yes!
And wink.
Oh, give him brown eyes instead of blue. Whatever. You know,
really,
little
just
tweaks.
Play around with it, right?
So, for the season premiere, which aired appropriately October 27th of 2006, so right around Halloween. Now, we talked a lot last season about how kind of confused we were by the choice in running order. And, you know.
It continues, right?
It continues, right?
Okay. So why would you open your season with this episode?
I mean, you open it with Tobe Hooper, which, again, I guess you still have a big name, because you can shout, even if people didn't watch Dance of the Dead, or even if people watched Dance of the Dead and forgot about it, you could still say, from the director of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and people will get excited, right? Was probably the logic, maybe? I don't know.
I get, for sure. I mean, maybe. And I will say, I think Zach disagrees with me, but I will say that I thought some of the effects in this one, like the gore effects, were good.
Oh, I agree. Again,
so like maybe they were flexing that muscle.
Yeah, I guess it. I think looking at this one, so this is directed by Tobe Hooper, based on a short story by
Bruce Pierce.
Yeah, which, have you read the short story?
No, I wanted to, but then like I got distracted by stuff. I don't know how
same,
that could have
happened. Same, right? Yeah. Instead, I just ended up scrolling through Twitter for 2 hours, being depressed, and just retweeting anything I could that I thought was helpful. yeah. So I also did not read the short story. Have you read other Ambrose Pierce?
Not for a while, and usually just like slotted into other collections. That
sure.
I was
I think I've read like some of like the Twilight Zone episode, like that short story, some things like that.
Because occasionally, like, if you get, like, a really, like, robust anthology of short fiction, you can get something that is, like, decades-spanning, huge, which is good, which I like. And I thought maybe I even owned this, but I didn't look.
It is
but,
online. Like, if you Google, it's on, like, Gutenberg Project. You can read it, public domain.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I wanted to. I'm curious too, because Reunited, and It Feels So Bad, is Richard Christian Matheson and Tobe Hooper.
I was worried when I saw that, I will say.
I just, it's like, okay, I don't want, I'm not going to go too far into it right the second, but it's like, Richard Christian Matheson, if you're listening to this at all, call me. I would love to talk to you about this. Richard Matheson is one of the best writers ever, I think, personally.
I would not argue,
Love, 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 love. Extensive knowledge, read a lot. I feel like I can make that statement. I do not understand the angle that his son takes with his storytelling choices.
Yeah.
They seem to be very Stephen King-y in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
and
which...
why I wanted to read the short story, because I wanted to see how much was in the original text and how much he kind of just conjured. Because there's a lot of stuff in here that is just really, I don't know, hokey and not effective.
Yeah, and it's, I will say from the get-go, I mean, the bar was so low for me on this that I'm like, well, this is such an improvement over Dance of the Dead in every way, in performance, in effects, without question, it looks better. It's still not great. It's not really good. It's kind of, it's okay, is where I would put it. So why don't you give a rundown of what the episode is about?
The episode is about, are we spoilers?
Yes, we're spoilers. It's, again, it's 55 minutes long. It's a short story. In order to talk about a short story, we have to talk about the ending. So yeah, we're spoiling.
All right. So if we're spoilers, then I'll start with, this is spoilers. There is a black goo that attacks people in the past, and then we flash forward and we see the present in Texas, air quotes Texas, because it doesn't look like Texas.
It looks Vancouver, probably.
it was Canada, yeah. It looked Canada-y.
I think there was even like Canadian accents in the episode.
It was the reporter man had the most bizarre accent.
Yes,
it was
yes.
like Canada by way of Maine with a Texas twang. I was like, I don't know what you're doing, sir. But I love it, honestly. There's this black goo, and it makes people want to, like, murder. It makes them real mean and angry. And then, but, like, the black goo is actually, like, oil, because this is where I think the beer stuff comes in. I think that this story, this is me hypothesizing, is about, like, drilling for oil, and the oil is corrupt, and it makes you do bad things. That to me sounds like a good story. I
Yeah,
don't
and
know.
like it should have anything to do with the episode, which it really doesn't, but
It
yeah, that makes
doesn't.
sense.
But so they're basically what, because what it, no pun intended, drills down to is
Oh.
that, like, that Sean Patrick Flannery, who's our main character as an adult, his like lineage is being hunted, basically, like his dad, him, his kid, his granddad, because his granddad drilled and got evil oil, like evil globular oil
Yeah.
that is out to attack him. But like the thing's not really even about that, which is
It's really
weird.
not. Yeah. It would have made more sense because he's the sheriff, the town sheriff, and he's kind of a terrible sheriff because
Oh my gosh, he's a
he's
terrible sheriff.
terrible.
I look, your girl here is not gonna be ableist, is not gonna be shitty or awful, but this man has a history of intense trauma that I don't know if he's worked through. He is clearly injured. He can't walk well. I just am saying I don't know if he's the best equipped to be the sheriff of this town.
No, no.
Again, like, this is not me trying to pass judgment on somebody who is differently abled and that maybe has some emotional things that they need to work through. I'm just saying that maybe he was not the best choice. Also, maybe he shouldn't have continued to live in the house where his mother was shot. I'm not trying to shame him for it, but he maybe should have scooted along
And
instead of
in
bringing
fairness,
his.
I guess he did was self-aware enough to know that he was a danger to his wife and son, right? Which is why they didn't live with him. Of course, again, if you're that much of a danger, like, I don't know, maybe don't have a kid if you're convinced you're going to pass this terrible thing on to a kid.
And I think this is where now we're getting to the heart of a little bit of the confusion, because if it's not explicitly about like bad oil coming to kill you, then it's about a man dealing with his memories versus what he believes is possible. So that's kind of where we land. Like, it's his like internal exploration, and I'm never really clear on
Yeah.
what he's doing and why. Like, he doesn't seem to believe anything that he saw happen that day as a kid, but yet he has cameras everywhere,
Yep.
and his wife clearly thinks that he's paranoid and not okay, which is why she takes the kid and leaves. I got the sense that she took the kid away, and that not that he pushed them away.
Oh, you might be right. It's been a few days since I watched it, and this is not one that sticks in the memory very well.
But like, I didn't understand any of that.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't understand, because then, like, because they're still kind of operating as a family unit, which is cute and great. And honestly, like, she's one of the best parts
Yeah,
of
she's
this for.
good. The son is, I mean, I'm just like rooting for the kid, which is
Huh.
why this also really pissed me off. Because I mean, what happens? So the town goes crazy.
Yes, as predicted.
Yeah. And to where again, like that could have been the heart of the episode, because that's a movie right there, right? A town with haunted oil, where everybody essentially cracks and then is killing each other. Like, and it's brutal. They're killing each other with their hands, but we don't get enough of the town to really care. Like, they isolate two characters, right? They give us Brendan Fletcher, as the deputy, and Ted Raimi as the priest, and like, it's just like they represent the whole town going crazy, basically.
Which would none n they neither one was particularly, and I like both those actors. So like to say that neither one was likable is the failing of the text. It's
I mean,
not
I
their
guess I don't know.
fault.
I was kind of rooting for Brendan, like even though like as soon as Brendan Fletcher shows up as the deputy, you're like, okay, well he's gonna die. Like I see that happening, but
They
it's like
really
they tried so
try to
hard.
paint him as like a idiot, as like a
Yeah,
fool,
well like
and
right
I
because
don't
he's like he's a
appreciate.
cartoonist and kind of dumb and but also like it seemed like he was kind of caring about his job and then they just have Ted Raimi kill him.
Which in a bizarre arm movement, I don't know, like
Yeah.
he reaches through the confessional and like down and get and pulls the gun, and like I'm like, dude, sir, my man, I don't think that's possible with physics. but that's fine. That's fine. This is a very suspension of disbelief, or just pretend you know what happened to that character.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
did you see that person? But who cares?
There's so much confusion. The more I think about it, like, was he a Catholic priest in Texas? That's not a thing really there, is it? I don't know.
It was a little disjointed.
Yes.
And not well. Like, this is when you're not brutalizing women for laughs, it seems like the best case scenario, you just have a muddled script that doesn't use its time effectively.
Yeah.
And this one really didn't use its time effectively. And, like, it shouldn't have been boring because they're only an hour.
Yeah,
like,
and this was, it was weird that this was boring.
It really, like, it dragged on in weird spots and lost momentum. Every time it got momentum, it lost it so quick.
Yep.
And like, oh, so there's this random throwaway nothing character of a chatty young woman who's wearing a short skirt, who we get a very inappropriate lingering shot of her bare legs, and I had no idea why they were doing it. And it was really weird and kind of gross. And I was like, is this girl going to get, she's going to get raped, right? Like, this is what they're telling me with that camera angle. No, her legs just get blown off in a car crash. So I have to see her half torso pulled out of car wreckage. It was gross. Like, why even, you introduced that character by being like, look at her sexy, fuckable legs. Now I'm going to rip
and now
them
we
off.
Ripped them off. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know. That was so weird.
I don't even remember. I remember the torso with no legs, but, like, I don't even remember the introduction of that character because there's so little of it sticks.
It's so true. I wouldn't have noticed either, except I was like, why are they basically showing me a crotch shot? Which they were. She was, like, sitting
yeah, like,
in the
upskirting.
Diner with, like, this tiny little skirt on. And I'm like, why are they doing this to this actress? I wonder if she's going to be, like, the deputy's love interest, or she's going to show back up and, like, help. No.
Now we just gotta cut her legs off. So then there is, again, to me, like, the one good scene is when his wife sort of gets the tar infection and starts getting violent with the son.
Yeah.
And he's able to separate them. He's able to kind of, like, knock her out, and then she wakes up and realizes what she did. And, like, that's good stuff. Like, the actress, it's Marissa Coughlin, who was in a lot of stuff, like, in the late 90s, early 2000s. Was she in Mrs. Tingle?
Oh, she might have been.
I think, yeah, she's, teaching Mrs. Tingle. She's the other girl. She's not Katie Holmes. She's the other girl. So, like, she had, like, a pretty big career for a while where she was just kind of always in a lot of those teen movies and stuff. And I think she's really good here because it's an effective scene. It's awful. You know, both of these people love their son and both of them have a moment of wanting to kill him. And so then Sean Patrick Flannery kind of sacrifices himself in a bad CGI moment of tar demon-ness. But his wife and son are driving away. Oh, great, they're almost out. They're going to do it. Oh, no, they run out of gas and a monster attacks them in the end. Fuck you!
Mm-hmm.
Ugh! And this is why I even wonder, like, oh, is this why they decided to air this one first? Because it's like all bets are off. We killed the woman and kid.
I mean, I guess I felt like all bets were off before, though. Like, I didn't need to be told that all bets were re-off.
Yeah.
But, okay, sure. I found the end really unsatisfying. Like, I feel like the air quote horror community at large has a big problem with air quote non-endings. You know, mostly when they're in movies about women or movies by women or have anything to do with women. They hate it when that happens. But, like, this was, like, this is the most non-ending shit I've ever seen in my life. Like, this is the actual kind of non-ending that makes me irritated. Like, you just didn't end it. You didn't end it.
Yeah, well, what? And yes, it gives you a punch so that most people, I think, leave the episode saying, oh, okay, well, the wife and kid die.
Then and, show me your-
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, if you're right. If you're going to do it, then do it. And,
it felt very unsatisfying.
It did. And, like, I know, like, look, I like a good dark ending. Like, that's...
Oh, me too.
You know, I'm a horror fan. Like, if a bad ending, like, a mean ending can work well. But I remember the point it changed for me, and it was probably 2016. And I remember really realizing it with Get Out and The Witch, how both movies could have ended much darker than they do. Especially Get Out, which filmed a darker, bleak ending and decided not to do that. And The Witch, which just ends a little further along than it needs to. It could end ambiguously and maybe be a cleaner movie for it, but instead it gives you one more thing so that you leave saying, oh, okay. And me in the last 5 years says, yeah, give me that, because I don't, I'm fine with a movie devastating me and scaring me and leaving me thinking the world is empty, but I'm also okay with giving me hope for characters that have been through a lot but that I've come to really care about. And so when you do just have a very quick, cruel, mean ending to characters that you've taken time to get me to like, especially when you've had another character, our protagonist, sacrifice himself for them, and then you just end on, eh, they're probably dead. I'm just kind of like, fuck you, you don't care.
Well, I think, yeah, you're right. And I think that maybe the argument could be made, and I didn't even really think about that. You're right. Sean Patrick Flannery makes what I refer to as the bro sacrifice. He sacrifices himself to save, although when he did it, I was like, but this is like about like family. So that kid is not safe. But that's fine. So I knew that that was going to happen. But like that's not what I have a problem with. That's great. That's a story you told, that somebody in this, it's about, like generational issues, which I love. So somebody a long time ago did something fucked up, and now this little boy has to pay for it, and he hasn't done anything. Why wasn't the whole thing about that? Anyways, but like, so show the kid getting pulled out of the car. Show the mom getting pulled out of the car, and then the kid getting pulled out the window. Just end it. Give me some implication of how bad it really happened, how indiscriminate this force is. How it's so how it's not as simple as just like sacrificing yourself. This thing has been unleashed and we can't do anything about it. I don't really feel like that was established. I'm writing a story in my head that I like way more than what I just watched.
Which has been the trend for these episodes.
I just think the weight was on the wrong things,
Yeah, I think
and
that's fair.
that there wasn't a full understanding of what the, 'cause I mean, speaking of Twilight Zone and mob mentality, episodes like the
Yeah.
Monsters Are Due on Maple Street is a great example of like you just throw a couple people together and have terrible stuff happen, and like the infighting, I mean, it could have just devolved into that, and it like hints at it, but like in a really unsatisfying way when like all the people show up at his house and are like, put us all in the basement with our weapons because nothing bad's gonna happen.
It's like,
And
yeah,
it was
okay.
just like, oh, okay. But like even that was unsatisfying. I don't know.
No, agreed.
Bummer.
Again, it's hard not to watch it and say, well, but it's so much better than Dance of the Dead, because it really is.
I mean, sure. But it still suffered from boring and pacing issues. Like, I just wish it
It
hadn't been.
feels much longer than it is. And again, this I think could be a full-length movie, but in its with the team it has as an episode, I don't want that full-length movie. If you put that in somebody else's hands, maybe I'd watch it, but I don't want Toe Poop, or, well, I mean, we can't have that anyway now. But like that, it didn't make me want more of anything. It just made me think, well, there should have been more, but then the episode would have been longer.
I mean, there was a lot of quiet time and a lot of slow time that I think could have been packed with other stuff to push the story along. But
Yeah.
I get an hour's a weird amount of time.
It
And I
is,
think
yeah.
that you can see some people having a bit of trouble with
Very
it in
true.
these.
Yes. And the trend continues. This is now, I guess, technically the 14th episode. The trend continued. But maybe it will improve. Maybe, right? Hey.
I mean, you never know, right? There could be some unfound or undiscovered gems. I can't talk. Undiscovered gems in this season, right?
I believe that. I do. Because I'm an optimist at heart, you know? Deep down, when there's a big old tar monster coming after my family, I believe if I let him eat me, the rest of my kin's gonna be okay. That's how I like to live in this world. All right. Well, do you recommend this episode?
No, not really. I mean, it's the I think that this is the reason why I stopped watching season two, because I found this one so boring and I thought like, oh gosh, I don't think I can get into this.
Not again, it's hard to say so far as far as like, well, if you're going to watch anything about season two, because again, both of us really haven't seen much from it, but I think it's probably one you can skip. But I think, unlike Dance of the Dead, it's not one that you're going to regret watching. I just don't
Yeah,
think
I
it's,
mean, worst case scenario, you end up picking up your phone or realize that you're not really paying attention anymore.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so that was the damned thing or that damned thing? It's
The
the
damn
damned.
thing, I
I
think.
really like picturing it as that damned thing and
That damn
imagining the
thing.
poster for that darn cat and
Yeah,
like
I like
the
it.
shuffling. Instead of the cat, it's a giant tar monster. Yeah. That's the way I like to live my life. All right, so we'll be back soon with let's see, the next episode is a John Landis one. So that worked out well
Yep.
last season. Let's see how it goes this one.
While the city sleeps, every night he creeps, just surveying his domain. He roams around like he owns the town. He's the king, he makes that plain. He knows every trick, doesn't miss a lick when it comes to keeping fat. Some city slicker, no one is quicker than a bad darn cat. Every nook and cranny and garbage can he inspects so thoroughly. When he's on his rounds, nothing's out of bounds to his curiosity. He can smile and purr at a pretty hurt till she don't know where she's at. Knows like a Geiger, oh what a tagger's a bat darn cat. He's a sly old codger, an artful dodger, a scrounger unsurpassed. A ball of fire, a nine live wire who just can't be outclassed. Yeah, this midnight rover, he lives in clover. It's an art he's got down pat. I never was a greater smooth operator than a bat darn cat. Now our cat's been paid every accolade, and he's earned all his acclaim. In a blaze of glory, he ends our story in the Feline Hall of Fame. But the way life goes, in a year, who knows, from the family he begat, you may wind up with one of, maybe the son of that darn cat. A bat darn cat. So now you've heard the tale I tell. That's T-A-L-E, not T-A-I-L. I'm talking about the tale of that darn cat.